Welcome to Sex with Simmery, frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery, and I am so flipping honored to introduce to you our guest today. So I have a couple members from Pussy Division. How y'all doing?
Good. Great.
So one of the reasons I'm super honored is this is actually your first media appearance. Normally it's not so much you're seen to do this kind of thing, right?
Normally we don't allow the talking. We write our responses back.
Because it's
through email.
Because it's like an anonymous sort of activism, right?
Yep.
Okay. So, first of all, the name is obviously awesome. What prompted the creation of Pussy Division?
Do you want to take that away?
Sure. A couple of us had just kind of been throwing around some ideas about different projects that we'd like to do and how we want to do more street-based projects, especially her and I that are here today. We were talking a lot, and I, you know, wanted to go forward with this stop sign thing, and then kind of the group kind of formed around that. The people that were really interested in that kind of came together as a group to launch that project, and then we were like, we kind of are a group now, so let's formulate this into something kind of official, you know, off the books, but official. And we just started having meetings, like organizing to go out and do it with the stickers, coming up with like all different kinds of ideas to do different projects. And then once we kind of made those decisions, it's just kind of been moving us forward. Like we've had so many people contact us, like different groups contact a partner with us and different great ideas come up. So since then, it's just kind of become a thing itself. So
the stop sign thing that you were mentioning, For people in the Philly area, they've probably seen your work and they may not know who is behind it. Can you talk about what that project specifically is?
That's our Stop Rape sticker project. That was the first project that we did. And basically, you know, we're trying to raise awareness about rape culture. And we've decided that we're trying to speak out and put an end to it. And also, you know, to start a discussion on what rape culture is, to get people to talk about it so that we can educate our friends and our family about, like, what is rape culture and also how prevalent it is because we know a lot of people that have been sexually assaulted before. So we decided to do this project to try to speak out about it.
Yeah, I mean, most people know people who've been sexually assaulted, but, like, whether or not that ever gets discussed is a really big, that's a totally different question, yeah.
Right. I mean, I think that kind of the silence around the word rape kind of really holds back the discussion and just putting it out there. I mean, I think it's brought up discussions with a lot of people. We've even heard people talk about it, like, just out on the street when we were around. Another thing is just kind of taking the burden off of survivors to feel that they are the ones that have to stop rape.
That's a
because
good point.
It's not their responsibility. It's society's responsibility. And so putting out that question of stop rape, well, how do you stop rape? Where, you know, what's part of rape culture and what do we do from here since things aren't really changing fast enough?
So what is the reaction that you've been getting? Is it been largely positive, or people just like asking questions? Like what is the general response to the campaign?
It's been largely positive. I think a lot of people were really excited about it. We got, you know, kind of an overwhelming response of people who saw the signs and they were just so thankful that somebody took the time to put those stickers up there and to, you know, start speaking about it. I think it can be very empowering. And like Pussy Division member number one just said that, you know, it's like less pressure off of survivors to have to talk about it and have to educate people on what rape culture is. You know, it's a group of people that are putting these stickers up all over the city. And so it's clear that there's support out there.
Yeah, I even somebody had even contacted us and said, you know, when I see these stickers, I feel like this is a safe place for me. It's reclaiming this space back for survivors, like in Philly, that see them. So we have gotten a lot of cool responses, especially like it's nice to like just go on Instagram. You like look at the hashtag mm-hmm. Stop Rape and just like so many pictures of like people that have like taken pictures and put it up there and like have their comments about it.
We recently discovered a blog post from the UK that we swear was our sticker.
Nice.
Yeah. It's kind of easy to tell.
Like, global.
Yeah.
I was curious about, like, so how many places, is this just a Philly thing? Like, how far is this gone? And is it, like, specific neighborhoods that you are convenient or you think that the message is especially important? Like, how widespread is the stickering?
There's a lot out in Philadelphia. I'd say pretty heavily saturated in South Philly. We have them in West Philly, Fishtown, Northern Liberties, basically anywhere with stop signs in Philly. I think like more central to like urban areas, not as much like out in like, you know, Mount Airy or Manayunk.
Some places like Old City just like don't have stop signs.
Yeah.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Yeah. If you've only got like streetlights. Yeah.
At the same time, people have requested that we, you know, help them do this project in other cities. So, you know, I think New Orleans, Oakland, LA, New York, Pittsburgh. So it's spread and we've, you know, assisted other people that want to, you know, continue this project in their own city.
So theoretically, it would be applicable anywhere. You're not specifically targeting any particular places?
No. We think it's a problem everywhere. It's a very widespread problem, you know, across the country, across the world.
I was just curious because I only saw them in like in neighborhoods as opposed to like, you know, the commercial areas. But that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about the fact there weren't stop signs.
I was thinking that I really wanted to put them up at Disney World.
Are there stop signs in Disney World?
No.
Oh, so we're going to have phase one, stop signs.
Yeah.
Phase two, go to Disney World. I like it. The other big project that I've seen you do, well, I haven't actually seen you do it, but I've seen the result, is the spray painting. Is it spray paint that's on the sidewalk?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be like some street harassment-y, chattery bullshit, and then like with a circle and the cross mm-hmm. through it, which is like the universal sign for don't. Yeah. So is that also as equally widespread?
No. Yeah, not as much. I'd say, you know, we started to do this downtown, and we do have some a little bit like outside, but we really tried to center it downtown because we thought like a lot of people could see it that way that are coming through. And we just have other projects that we also want to do. So we kind of just did this within a short time frame, put them where we thought a lot of people would see them, and, you know, decided to move on to the next project.
Because for me, that one had a tremendous impact, and I want, we'll definitely go back to the stop rape thing too, because I have lots more questions about that. But the anti street harassment movement is to me so huge, because it's, I mean, not only is it like just the beginning of where that whole spectrum of like treating people shitty, you know, starts, but like it's so relevant. It's every single day. I mean, like, yeah, we all know people have been sexually assaulted, but like I literally cannot go a day without somebody being like, hey, baby, you want to sit on my face? And I'm like, that's a very nice offer, but I don't think you meant it nice, and fuck yourself.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah, it's definitely something that happens to probably 100% of women on a daily basis. And I think that a lot of people don't realize that those are things that we experience daily. You
if
know,
you
I'll be riding
area,
my bike to Center City, which is maybe 20 minutes away, and get like 2 catcalls on the way. So that project has gotten, I think, an overwhelming response. People are really excited about it. Because, again, that's like something that I think everybody can relate to. But it's a little bit harder to put the stencils in all of the areas that we put the stickers, because it's just like the nature of the project is a little bit more difficult. You know, the stencils get all like cruddy. So, and then we get people that, I don't know if I'm like about to answer a next question for you, but, you know, like the stickers, we had people message us, like, where can I get these stickers? I want to put them up in the town where I live in. And we've actually gotten that with the stencils too. Mm-hmm. So shortly after we started the stencil project, we got these messages from people that wanted the stencils and they wanted to start doing it in New York City and wherever in their hometown. And so we've been like mailing out our stencils that we've used, so that they can spread it around out there.
And the other thing about street harassment and people not realizing it, aside from the fact that, you know, people just sometimes don't listen to women, because, you know, I see the thing on Facebook all the time. It'll be like they dressed up a man as a woman, and then he experiences street harassment, and now it's real because dude experienced it, and it's also sort of like setting back conversations about trans stuff too, which is also sort of problematic. But yeah, it's like how many women need to tell you that this is a problem before people realize it? And there are also women who don't experience it, and I think that they aren't taking into account they may not live in an urban area, they might drive more often than they walk, that sort of thing. And so this is obviously like, this is on the sidewalk, this is where this is happening, this is like, you know, ground zero of all the shit talking.
Yeah I think, you know, we want to try to call attention to the issue. There are a lot of people that aren't very aware of the issue, maybe think that it's like kind of benign, it's not a big deal. So calling attention to it, the fact that it's really not acceptable, and also kind of saying to women that experience this every day, you know, it's okay to be upset about this. It's not acceptable, and you don't have to just ignore it and accept it and just like go on living like this every day.
It's so true. And I'm every time I see one of those reminders, like just going outside is not an invitation to like comment on really anything, really at all. Like just let people just go and be. It's just I'm gonna go stencil some shit.
The other thing is that this project, along with other projects like Stop Street Harassment, the Everyday Sexism Project, Hollaback, and what we're doing starts these discussions where a lot of people, I hate to like, you know, categorize with gender, but like I feel like a lot of men don't realize that we experience street harassment all the time. You know, it's not just something that like happens like once a month or whatever. Like it can happen every single day, like multiple times throughout the day, and people are saying these disgusting things to you. And or then you get somebody that tries to like, you know, the guy that's like, oh, I'm just trying to say hi and help you out. And I'm just like trying to offer to help you bring your bike upstairs. Like, why are you giving me a dirty look? And I'm like, because you're the fifth person that, you know, said something to me today and I'm scared of you and I don't know what you're gonna do. And I'm threatened or harassed or, you know, objectified like every single day. And I think that this project in particular really started as discussion for people that did not realize it happened so often. And they're starting to realize, oh my God, I didn't know that you went through this like every single day, that every time you go out, you walk downtown, you go to all these places, you go to work every day, this is happening to you. You know, I think a lot of people don't get the severity of it.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. We had posted an article that was like a daily diary of like street harassment. So this girl wrote a diary of like basically her street harassment encounters in a day. And so my friend was like, a male friend of mine was like, I read this article. It was pretty interesting. It was good, except, I mean, she obviously like exaggerated a lot. Okay. And so
I understand. If you have no context, it probably seems like that. And I think it also gets conflated with, oh, I, you know, I would love to have people hit on me all day.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, but it's not. Like, it's, I know what a compliment fucking right. sounds like. You know, I know when someone is like trying to be friendly. It's cool. I'm from the Midwest.
We nice say hi ass. To is, that's not, not really a compliment.
Not.
And even yeah. if it is like kind of nice, you know, just like comments on our bodies are not, you know, it's not, you're not entitled to make comments about our bodies, whether they're well-intentioned or whether they're nice or not. It's really like, it's not okay.
And to add on top of that is like, what a woman does in reaction can then cause like a whole other escalation of things. Because I've found the ignoring will be like 90% of the time what I end up doing. If I'm on my bike, I can usually say something back and I try to go for something that's more like clever than necessarily mean. Because how fast can you come up with something like, well, going about 25 miles an hour in the opposite direction? But if you are in a situation where, you know, you're walking slowly or you're stuck or that sort of thing, I mean, it's very common for someone to say something that starts out sounding like it even is benign or nice and then very quickly turn into one of those, well, fuck you anyway, bitch, like,
yeah,
and then like a whole string of what's wrong with what you look like and like,
cunt, you ugly anyway,
yeah. And it's just like, wow, I would like a DSM right now.
Like, you know what, it's honestly doing this project, I think For me personally, the act of actually, like, doing these stencils on the sidewalk has really empowered me to be able to speak back against people who are harassing me on the street. You know, sometimes I'll just say to them flat out, like, that's inappropriate. You know, when I'm riding on my bike and some dude rides up behind me and passes me and looks at me and says, you got a nice ass. And I say to him, you know what, that's inappropriate. You know, I have no problem saying that. How they take my response is really, I don't care. You know, as long as I feel, like, empowered to be able to speak up or, you know, hey, sexy, or hey, baby, and just be able to say, you know, that's not my name. The issue with that, as I'm talking about it, is that's not always a possibility. You know, sometimes we're in situations where it's really dangerous. And it's not practical to be able to verbally speak back and respond to street harassment, because sometimes it could put you in a really dangerous situation, depending on where you are or what's going on. So it's also why these stencils are important.
Yeah. And just raising the possibility that, you know, it doesn't have to be accepted. Like, right. that you right. don't have to come up with rationalizations for why it's completely fine that whatever the rationale is. Yeah, I'm so glad that you're doing this work, because like I can come up with witty retorts all day long, but there's just too many people. There are just too many people and it's never going to work. And you're not just involved specifically with street harassment. You've got like a whole host of other interests ranging.
We have a whole list.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know where to begin. I think that the proximal thing that might be of discussion would be that the slut walk's coming up and that you're co-organizing. Is that correct, that you're coordinating?
We're supporting.
Okay.
Yeah, we're helping. We're helping to promote it. We're going to be there at a table. Basically, Slut Walk Philadelphia invited us to present the walk with them and to kind of help out with, you know, things that are involved with getting the event ready.
So
we're very, very honored, by the way, yeah. to be able to, like, not only be a part of it, but just, like, at the level that we've been asked to participate is kind of amazing.
Yeah. I mean, we just really came together and started this in April. And so far, there's just so much that has happened and so many, like, invitations we've gotten. It's just been, like, honestly, it's felt really great to me that the feminist community in Philadelphia and, like, you know, just like reaches out to each other and invites each other to collaborate. And it's really great.
So were you involved like individually in Slut Walk previously or is...
Nope.
First time? Okay. So what to you does the Slut Walk mean? What is the utility of it? Why is it that you are involved in supporting it?
Well, the focus, you know, and what they're calling it this year is the March Against Rape Culture, which I really love. I think the whole, I think especially in the past year and the things that have happened in the past year, the whole concept of rape culture has been something that's more, you know, people have actually heard about it and learned about it, maybe heard about stuff in the news and, yeah. and stuff like that. And kind of getting people to be more educated about that and stand up and say, no, you know, slut shaming is part of this problem. You know, lack of, you know, understanding about consent is part of this problem. And, you know, it's, you know, we need to do something more about it, I think is, you know, I don't know.
I mean, there's also an interesting history with slut walk, and obviously the origins mm-hmm. of it have to do with a few years ago, and there was a police officer, you all know what's mm-hmm. going on, a police officer who said that, you know, if women didn't dress like sluts, that would help protect them from rape. And there's a lot of conversations about, okay, well, nobody ever asked what the rapist was wearing, and how mm-hmm. the fuck does that have to do anything? Like, and it has also had this sort of like controversial history with people who are not okay with the word, with the name itself, yeah. and the fact that not everybody can embrace that, and not everybody is necessarily on board with the totality of the message. Do you have anything to add to that, or any commentary on that?
Your first comment, I always want to like bring this up whenever I hear that comment. You know, don't dress slutty because mm-hmm. then you're asking to be raped, because it makes me so angry. You know, sexual assault and rape are not only performed on women. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's men get sexually assaulted, men get raped. More men in the military are raped than women. Women just have a higher chance of being raped. Children are raped. You know, it's, like, how dare you say it's because this girl wore this outfit? It happens all the time to people who are fully clothed, you know. So this idea of blaming it on women who are, you know, wearing a certain set of clothing, and, you know, this problem of rape, to all of a sudden decide that the cause of it is women's bodies and that the solution is to shame their bodies and to make them feel ashamed about showing their bodies or feeling sexy or feeling sexual. You know, it's become this culture of you have to hide yourself. You have to behave and you have to like act perfect, and you can't have sex, and you have to cover yourself up because otherwise you're going to get raped. But that's not the cause of rape. And I think taking ownership of the word slut, you know, in my opinion, also, you know, we are very against slut shaming as Pussy Division. You know, we believe that we can't keep blaming the victim, and we can't keep making people feel ashamed of themselves.
This is a really phenomenal point. Like, the other thing that definitely needs to be mentioned is, like, some of the most vulnerable populations are not at all even necessarily dressed any particular way. Like, the thing that comes to mind is mentally and physically disabled people who have caretakers. Mm-hmm. And the prevalence of physical, sexual, emotional abuse that happens in that situation, mm-hmm. and how ludicrous it is mm-hmm. that when anybody would imply that, you know, they had brought it on. Mm-hmm. Like, so when you really think about who is subject to it, and then we have just a very specific stereotype of, like, you know, someone jumps out of the bushes, which is silliness for the most part. I mean, it certainly happens. Stranger rape absolutely does happen, but we're not talking about what really does occur.
You know, sometimes I'm convinced that, like, the people who kind of started this idea of, like, the rapist is the person that jumps out of the bushes in the middle of the night and is attacker, I think it has been brought on by people who commit sexual assault because they're your everyday Joe Schmo. They're your boss. They're your father. They're your uncle. They're all these people, your date, your boyfriend, you know, all these people that are in your life. You know, a lot of times victims of sexual assault knew their perpetrator. It's somebody that they've been in contact with.
So do you think that, and this kind of goes to, you've probably seen recently, there was a massive survey of like probably 40 or 50,000 men in Asia. And rather than asking, have you ever raped a woman? They just did all the other questions around it, which were like, have you ever?
Yeah, we just posted that article the other day.
Yeah. So it was like, have you ever forced a woman to have sex when you knew she didn't want to? Or have you ever had sex with a woman when she was so drunk or so drugged up that she could not say yes or no? Or could not be expected to really consent. And when questions are asked in that way, you get much more interesting answers. And, you know, among college age men in America, you know, it's a bizarrely high number. And then when you ask a question like, back to that, the survey of Asian men, it was like one in four in, mm-hmm. in specific countries, one in four men were absolutely, yes, I have. And then when you talk to college-age American men, who are just easy to survey, because they have to get extra credit, when they ask questions like, if you knew you could get away with it, would you force a woman to have sex? And the percentage, I don't remember right offhand, but it's definitely above 10, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, if you know 10 guys, like, kind of disconcerting. So is the problem that the average guy is unaware of what counts, like, as consent, as sexual assault? Like, if phrasing changes the way people answer, what is at the root of this? Like, where is the disconnect for men?
I think the concept of consent and understanding what that entails is definitely a big thing. I was just watching 16 Candles the other day, and I hadn't watched it since, you know, whenever it came out, and I was really young, and it totally went over my head. But there was totally a scene in the movie when one of the guys was like, you know, it's not about sex. If I wanted to have sex, I'd just go in there and have sex with my girlfriend right now. She's passed out. Like, something yeah. like that. And it was just like, you know, it's that kind of stuff. It's kind of acceptable. It's like, oh, if your girlfriend's passed out, you can have sex with her. That's not thought of as rape for a lot of people. And I think that's like a newer concept for a lot of people, especially since the, what was it, the Ohio?
Steubenville?
Yeah. And since that was such like a, you know, high profile media thing that people really all over the country are starting to like hear about, no, this is not okay, you know? And
there were people who actively voiced the opinion that if you get drunk, you no longer have the right to not say yes.
Right. Like, yeah.
And also that article that you're talking about, one of the conclusions that they can, just to like piggyback off what you're saying, one of the conclusions that they came up with was that they think that people don't understand what rape is. Hmm. You know, they think that people just don't have an understanding of what qualifies as rape. Because all these men were answering so honestly and answering in a way that, you know, really, yes, they've raped women.
I think another big thing is the idea that, like, women owe you sex. Mm-hmm. So if you feel that if you go out with a woman, if you're nice to her, if you take her out, if you treat her well, that you're entitled to sex and you don't get it, then there's like a justification there for taking it. And I think that's a really big thing.
And this also, to go back to the earlier point about how rape happens, you know, gender regardless, like, that is not a problem that's exclusive to women. Like,
right.
There are many men I've spoken to who were raped by women who also did not care about consent and assumed mm-hmm. that because there's this narrative about how men are always game and like an erection equals consent, that like I've heard lots of stories of guys who were like, I did not want this to happen, I had drank too much, you know, and I was, you know, I wasn't gonna like beat her up and yada yada yada. So I mean, this is about a whole cultural narrative of like not really voicing what you want and what you don't want, and not mm-hmm. making sure you get enthusiastic consent.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only that, but like going back to like what we're talking about, slut shaming, you know, we need to be teaching each other to respect each other's bodies and to respect each other's choices. And I think what happens is people do things and then they look for somebody to blame. Mm. And oftentimes what's happening now is the victim is being blamed in all sorts of these situations. you know, we're starting to ask these questions like, how many drinks did you have? You know, you had two drinks. So did you really know what was going on? Was it, you know, did you really say no? Why didn't you fight back? Why didn't you do all these things? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the pressure is on the victim. And really, you know, we're not teaching each other to respect an individual's choice and to respect their body and their personal space, which is something that needs to start happening.
Getting back to what you said about the March Against Rape culture, one thing that comes to mind is, like, you know, how long have have women been in, you know, rape trials and been attacked because of their sexual history, been attacked because of what they're wearing, yada, 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 or walk into a police office and, you know, shamed or accused of kind of putting themselves in the wrong situation and getting raped. I think, like, every day I feel like I'm reading stories of this online. And how long has this been happening? And, you know, what's changing? There is no change. And I feel like events like the Slut Walk, or, you know, the March Against Rape Culture that's happening in a couple of weeks, is part of the push back against that and saying, no, nothing's changing on its own. We have to do something.
Yeah. Things are changing, and it is because of activism. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it's no longer, in most places, no longer legally allowable to enter the victim's clothing in as evidence, unless it's, you know, evidence of, like, you know, something that's on it. Mm-hmm. But it can no longer be used against her. There are police stations now who have come out about the fact that up until recently, their default position when someone came in to make an accusation of sexual assault, their default position was to assume that that person was lying. Mm-hmm. And they're now changing that. And it's entirely because there's more conversation about it. Mm-hmm. You know, rape has obviously always been a problem. And you could argue we'll never know how prevalent it used to be. There's, like, literally no way to ever really know. But perhaps now it's just being discussed more, which is a huge step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have a great deal of hope about this. I think that this is, like, I don't know, is this fourth wave feminism?
Permanent wave.
Permanent wave. Just to go back to the March Against Rape Culture. So just to remind people when and where it is.
Yes, it is Saturday, September 28th. It starts at 11 a.m., starting and ending in Love Park.
Okay. Starting and ending, so there's not, like, a...
It's a loop.
Oh, okay.
It'll start there, we'll leave, and then we'll come back.
I dig it. Cool. You also do some interesting work separate from sexual assault, separate from rape culture, that has to do with gender nonconforming people, trans rights, etc. Do you want to talk about that work at all?
Yeah, we have an upcoming project, which we started already on our Facebook page. We just posted a picture of a wheat paste project that we've started. So you can go around Center City and try to find these wheat pastes. We are trying to respond in a timely manner to some of the recent, I don't know if you heard of some... trans women who've been murdered in Philadelphia, and
Diamond Williams is one of the more recent horrific murders that happened this summer.
Yeah, and we had the opportunity to actually attend the vigil, which was, you know, heartbreaking. And we have these city politicians up there that had just been saying, we don't want to meet like this every year. You know, for the last 3 years, we've been having these vigils. When are we going to stop doing this? And one comment that actually stuck out in my head when we were there was somebody said, I think it was Sade that was there, that said, Philadelphia is, like, one of the leading cities in LGBT services and support. And if this is happening in Philadelphia, this kind of a gruesome murder, what does that say about, you know,
the rest of the country.
The rest of the country and what's going on. And that really, I think, was an eye-opener, that statement. And, you know, we started thinking, you know, I think since we've gotten together, since we've started Pussy Division, since we've started this group, that's been an issue that we've been trying to address, you know, gender equality, trans equality. And so right now we're trying to not only, you know, respond to the events that have happened, but also to educate the public. We feel that there's a lot of people out there that just don't know, and they don't know much about it. And so we feel like it would help to educate them, which is why we're putting a very educational wheat paste in the city.
Can you describe the wheat paste? I got to see it. It's cool.
There's two right now. One has a dancer on it. It says, "I am not just my gender. Transgender people are friends, sports fans, artists, activists, students, athletes, TV watchers, performers, authors, educators, workers, coffee lovers, family members, hopers, dreamers." So basically, you know, from our friends who are trans, basically one of the messages that they told us was that, you know, when people talk to us or ask us questions, you know, we want to be seen as more than just a gender identity that you don't understand, more than just, you know, trans, or, you know, which is often like fetishized and over-sexualized. We're human beings and we have all the hopes and dreams that everyone else does, and to be seen as that and not just a gender identity. The other wheat paste is, it's got the trans symbol and it says, "Trans lives have value. Violence against the transgender community must stop now." I mean, we're all horrified about the things that go on year after year here. And, you know, we really want to be allies in supporting the trans community through, you know, a lot of the difficulties that happen here in Philadelphia.
That is a really interesting point about Philly specifically, because I've been reading more and more about how Philly's becoming kind of a place to go to get good medical services. If you're doing surgery, it's a great place to come. Like, the hospitals have more people here that are equipped to do it. So what is the happening there? Is there just more people that come, and then just the probability of violence is increasing? Is there something about Philly's community, something about the culture? Is there a clashing? What's happening?
I don't think that these crimes are specific to Philly. I think that they happen everywhere. Yeah. It's just that we're talking about it a lot in Philly, and I guess because we're based here, our focus is on Philly. But I know that this kind of violence happens all over. It happens in cities and, like, rural, you know, counties and all that stuff like that. It's all over.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think just like within a weekend or like a week, there was like three different murders in like three different cities in the U.S., including, you know, something that had happened here. So this is definitely a nationwide problem. If Philly, you know, tends to be a progressive city in a lot of ways, but like, you know, you had mentioned about like Sade's comment, like, if things this horrific happen here, I don't even know what's happening other places. You know, we do have a lot of great services here. You know, there's a strong trans community here. There's a lot of, like, you know, supportive groups and stuff like that. But still, the consciousness and, like, the level of understanding about trans issues and gender issues is generally just really low. Like, people don't know about it. Even, like, you know, the media's reporting on the murders and different things that happen have been really inappropriate, like misgendering, using the wrong pronouns, and ultimately being really, really disrespectful to trans people. So the more understanding, the more growth in that area, it's, you know, hopefully it'll just improve in the future.
I feel like the reporting on Chelsea Manning is like a perfect example of, like, if somebody got married and changed their names, reporters would be more than capable of, like, remembering what to refer to someone as. But, like, Chelsea Manning, for some reason, it's a problem.
It's not fucking rocket science. You know, she asked to be called a she from now on. And not only with her, but, like, that was a huge issue in these reports when, you know, people who are transgender get murdered, and then the news report starts talking about, oh, and then they were used to be a man.
A man dressed as women's clothing.
Yeah, a man dressed in women's clothing was murdered. And then there's all sorts of different news reports. It's very incredibly insensitive. And we are, you know, not tolerating it anymore. We individually will write to these, some of these news companies and tell them, listen, you're using incorrect language and you're being extremely insensitive.
Yeah. I think the Chelsea Manning thing is interesting because it was really, as far as I can remember, the first national story about somebody that's transitioning and, you know, requesting to use like different pronouns and requesting hormone therapy, probably the first time ever in like a military prison situation. And so I think it's the first time that a lot of people are even hearing and, you know, learning about this at all.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few high profile people like Lana Wachowski comes to mind, who made the Matrix series, the director.
There's definitely some famous trans people, yeah. But I think, like, you know, I don't even know who that is. And like, as far as like somebody that everyone knows about, that everyone is known as a man that is now transitioning, it's definitely, I think, you know, a first.
And it was a whole interesting thing because I remember when the first news stories came out, I was hearing that she was going by Brianna, and then some time passed, and what was on her website from her family was that at this point right now, the focus was just on the trial and the defense and like wanting to stay with male pronouns at that point. And I think that they were just sort of waiting to see what would happen. And that also adds to the confusion for people, because not that it was Chelsea's responsibility to educate the whole world, you know, whatever, but it seemed to come out of nowhere for some people. Other folks knew that this was the reality. But for other people, it was like, what is this just like in order to get out of jail?
Yeah, it was really
so many comments about that. Like, oh, she's doing this to get a less harsh sentence.
Or like get into a woman's prison.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, whatever.
Okay. All right. Yeah, just
This is okay. The easy way out.
Yeah, the easy way out. It's the transition. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh my god. Yeah. So that's already, we're discussing like a variety of stuff. What other stuff do you do? I mean, I want to make sure we get some more things on the list.
Whatever you want us to do.
Oh my god. Awesome.
Another exciting thing we have coming up is that we are partnering with Tatiana. How do you say her last name?
I don't even know. I always have
Tatiana. It starts with an F. She lives in Brooklyn. She does these great wheat pastes that basically are portraits of women with statements underneath that kind of reflect their experiences with street harassment. So, like, there's one, stop telling women to smile. Mm-hmm. There's another one that's like, my name is not Honey Boo, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, my name is not Baby. Women are not here for your validation, which is a personal favorite of mine.
So she is from Philly. She's currently doing a Kickstarter to raise money to do like a tour to like a bunch of different cities, and so she's gonna do her stop here on the 28th, also the day of the slut walk.
Snap.
But it's gonna be 6 to 9 p.m September 28th at Third Ward, and she's gonna have her art hung. I think we're gonna also have some of our work presented, and she's gonna lead a discussion on street harassment, maybe have some of the women talk that she did portraits of. So that should be a really cool event as well.
Right on.
Plus we always have an ongoing list. We're always brainstorming. Yeah. So we have projects for the future that we're trying to work out too.
So is everybody that's involved an artist? Is this...
No. I would say it's really a diverse group of people. And as far as like what we do, you know, artists, musicians, social workers, therapists, I don't know. Who are we?
We're feminists.
Are they?
And it's, you know, we're not a closed group. We're not, you know, we're not exclusive only to women or, you know, anything like that. So we're always open to people that request to help out with our projects or get more involved. You know, there's like a lot of people that aren't like in the core group of Pussy Division, but have definitely contributed and mm-hmm. done things.
You know, we actually have some like regular active members on our Facebook page, which really helps. I feel like it helps keep us running, you know, this like participation that we have from people on our Facebook page and our discussions. That's a huge part of what we do too. You know, we love our street projects and everything, but you know, our Facebook community is also pretty big.
So there's been like a lot of response, and it sounds like a lot of different people want to be involved. Who's the most surprising? Has anything really like bowled you over that like you would not have expected someone to be an ally or wanted to be involved that has been? Is there anything like that?
You know, a lot of people that are involved, we don't know personally. There are people that found our Facebook page and our projects, and they're like, oh my gosh, you guys are fucking awesome. Like, and they just start participating in our discussions, and then they'll like, you know, ask us for our stencils and ask us for things and try to help out. You know, initially on our Facebook page, we just sent invites to all our friends.
I know. I think we have over 500 followers on Facebook now, and I have no clue who most of them are. Yeah. So that's wonderful. We're so glad about it.
That's great. So if people want to get involved, if people, can they send you money? Like,
yeah,
we definitely, you know, we try to all contribute to the costs, but you know, we definitely,
we're not all rich.
No, none of us are. And so we need to do some fundraising in order to fund our projects in the future. Actually, at the march on the 28th, we'll have a table. We'll be selling t-shirts with our stencils on them. And some other stuff to try to fund our projects. So, of course, you can send us money too, or you could buy our stuff. And that would, you know, the money would go directly to the projects that we do.
So how else can people find out about you? There's the Facebook, there's the Twitter, anything else?
Yeah. We're on Tumblr. That's really just pictures of what we're doing. But and I think Facebook and Twitter are the best.
We're on Pinterest too.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Sometimes. You can always go on there and find us.
We have a Gmail account too. It's PSSYDivision@gmail.com, which we check pretty regularly if you want to email us.
Would they not let you put the U in there?
No.
Oh, Gmail. I'm disappointed.
Know. It is disappointing.
Oh, Gmail.
I think we had an issue with Tumblr too.
But that was because somebody took it.
Somebody already had it.
And didn't use it.
Oh,
know.
That's the worst.
I know, what a waste.
Because there's an @Timmery, and she's tweeted exactly twice. And I am just like, you do not understand. Squandering.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I just tweet at her that I'm mad. Like, nothing.
Like do that somehow with this Tumblr page.
Like, maybe they'll hand it over. Yeah. I mean, if you can message them, they might be like, "Oh yeah, I'm not using it. Go ahead." You know, it could be possible. Yeah. Awesome. So I'm super pleased and super honored that I got to be your first media. So everybody should go check out all of this stuff. Everybody should come to the March Against Rape Culture, and of course to the other thing. What is it that she's doing that night? It's a speech?
It's like a workshop. Like she's showing her art projects, and she's gonna like I think do an artist talk about her Kickstarter project, which you should all check out.
Okay, so the march is at Love Park early in the morning, 11 o'clock. Well, that's not early. It's early to me. 11 o'clock on September 28th, and then at six to nine at Third Ward.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So everybody knows how to do this. No excuses. You know you want to be a part of this. Thank you very much for being on the show, and thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Sex with Timmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Timmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.